Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. It's the BangingBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Monday, July 9th. I am your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up at DSI using that promo code BANG200, you get 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Monday, Thursday format here with the Bettors Box. Today is Monday, so we will do our Monday mailbag. If you ever have questions for the Monday mailbag, at Skating Tripods on Twitter or Adam at bangthebook.com to hit me up via email. As you know, my picks and tips piece can be found every day over at the website. If you subscribe to notifications at bangthebook.com, you'll know right away when that article is posted, when it's updated, so you can take a look at that and see what I have to say about the card for that day. Also over at bangthebook.com, lots of great stuff going on. Make sure you click on that map over on the right side of our homepage to find out the current state of legalized sports betting in your particular state. You can also check out neighboring states as well. We've got our NFL season win totals all out for all 32 teams. Whole bunch of college football season win totals have been posted already. I've got a bunch more to post here today as well, and I got to keep working on the ones that I'm doing. So lots of college football preparations going on over at the website. Told all of our writers I'd like to have all those in by July 18th. We should have all 130 teams previewed here by next Thursday, next Friday, somewhere in there as I get those posted. So you can make sure to check out all of those team previews for the upcoming college football season. Really not that far away, about what, a month and a half or so now before we get that first weekend of games. So, time is flying by. I know that you may have limited time availability with, the summer months and kids out of school and all that type of thing. You're taking vacations and everything else. So, you have to prioritize. You want to keep in mind that, you want to be prepared for the seasons. You want to be prepared with multiple sports books at your disposal. So check out our sports book review pages. You can find a lot of great information on those. bangthebook.com/sportsbooks. And then we've got a rating guide over there, top U.S. sports books that take Bitcoin. Very important to have all that stuff set up and squared away so that you're not scrambling to do it when the college football and the NFL seasons are ready to get going. Speaking of football, both NFL and college, you can do that with the Golden Nugget Ultimate Football Showdown. That is downtown at the Nugget. You do have to sign up in person for that, but Maddie over at Football Contest is a fantastic proxy. First year that will be a much bigger contest. They lowered the entry fee from $2,000 to $1,000. Seven sides every week, college and the NFL. So if you're more of a college handicapper than an NFL handicapper, maybe you've got a buddy who's very good at the NFL, go split that entry, get involved in that contest. Make Maddie your proxy for that. Obviously, you know about the Westgate Super Contest. We'll be in that again here this year at Bang the Book. Sign up started for that July 1st. But again, you have to sign up in person and then use a proxy if you live outside of Nevada. So Maddie at footballcontest.com should be your go-to contact for that. Speaking of contests, those are still going on at bangthebook.com as well. Our daily streaker contest, which you can enter anytime. The monthly contest, you can enter those anytime, but obviously you want to try to do that around the start of the month. Monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. Cash prizes available for those contests at bangthebook.com. We really have lots of great stuff there. I mean, we're far more than just the homepage that we have. Lots of betting tools, our matchup data section. Every day we've got betting trends and power lines, lots of statistics, a forum where you can go and banter with some like-minded individuals. We really do have a lot over there, so make sure you take some time here while it's a pretty light time of the year for the sports betting calendar. Check out everything that we have to offer so you know that it's there for the football season. And obviously, of course, we've got the semifinals here for the World Cup on Tuesday and Wednesday. Admir's done a fantastic job throughout the tournament, and he's got his previews up for those two games as well. So that's going on over at bangthebook.com. All right, the format for today's show, we've got the Monday mailbag, got three questions for that. Then we'll go beyond the box score, take a look down the lines. I'll give you my pick for Monday night and then preview some things here for the week ahead. And go ahead and start with the Monday mailbag here. And first question comes via email from Nathaniel. Says, when you're betting on a futures pick, like, for example, the Indians to win the World Series, what kind of wager are you making? Do you follow the 1% to 5% betting scheme, or do you do it a different way? Thanks for taking the time to answer and read my questions. And, the biggest thing that I would suggest for people when it comes to betting on futures is that you want to allocate a certain amount of your bankroll for futures only. So if you've got $2,000 in your account and you like to play futures, maybe set aside $500 or $1,000. Obviously, this all depends on how liquid you need your bankroll to be. How much of it are you putting in play on a daily basis? That's very important for you to try to figure out. But you also want to always be evaluating, you know, what your ROI is betting on a daily basis versus what your ROI might be playing futures, whether it's season win totals or, you know, division props, AL and NL pennant. And obviously, this is true across all sports as well. You know, are you doing very well with NBA season win totals or NHL point totals or something like that? If you're doing well with the futures, then allocate more of your bankroll for those. Keep some money around to be liquid on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, if you're doing a better job with these season-long bets or some of these live futures throughout the course of the year, do more of those. Maybe it's not as exciting. Maybe it's a little bit tougher to have that money tied up for 3, 4, 5, 6 months in some instances. But view them as investments, because when you think about it, there's a lot less variance in playing futures than day-to-day betting. You do your overall season preview, and we're doing that with all those college football season previews. It's hard to bet college football on a week-by-week basis. You're dealing with the spread. You're dealing with a much larger sample size in the market. When you're playing futures like season win totals, it's you against the book. It's maybe you against the market with some of the early guys that have gotten in, but it's you against your preseason preparations. And yes, there's risk involved. I mean, you know, if you're betting if you're betting a season win total like on Oklahoma last year, for example, yeah, you're hoping Baker Mayfield doesn't get hurt. On a week-to-week basis, you can adjust for a Baker Mayfield injury. If you're playing a full season win total, you really can't do that. You know, if you go out there and bet a season win total on the Dodgers and Clayton Kershaw needs Tommy John, that's a problem. That's obviously something that's going to affect your bet in a negative way. But still, you know, if Clayton Kershaw leaves a start, for example, and after, you know, six batters, well, then he's gone for that game. And you've got money on that game. You know, you don't have the full season for the Dodgers to kind of figure this thing out. So that's the first thing here. That wasn't really part of the question necessarily, but that's the first thing for me. Have a part of your bankroll completely allocated just for futures, whether that's 10%, 20%, 30%, whatever you want, however big you feel your edges are in the futures market. I know Brad Powers, for example, who we'll have on here hopefully shortly to do a little bit of a college football preview podcast. You know, I know that he plays a lot of season win total stuff, a lot of games of the year stuff, because you can take advantage of that soft early market. It's a lot less efficient now than it will be during the season. Baseball's the same thing. There's a lot of uncertainty with these teams when it comes to preseason futures. So you want to make sure that you have some capital available to make some plays there on that. Now, to the question here itself from Nathaniel, the Indians to win the World Series is a different kind of wager, because this is a team virtually guaranteed to make the playoffs. They're up 9.5 in the Central Division. No one is going to run them down. All of the teams in the Central Division are looking at being sellers right now, while the Indians are looking to be buyers and kind of shore up some of their problems in the bullpen and possibly pick up some outfield help as well. So this is a different kind of futures bet, because you know that you're going to get the opportunity to hedge. So this is one where you'd want to go a little bit heavier on it. Now, I saw one of our listeners sent me that in the Australian offshore market, you can actually find the Indians at 21-1. A lot of places in the 10 or 11-1 range right now. But this is one where you'd want to go heavier, because you're going to have a hedging opportunity in the American League Division Series, because they're not going to have to play that one game wildcard playoff. So maybe if your standard futures bet is 2 or 3%, you can do a 5% type thing here with a bet like this, because they're going to make the playoffs. You will make money on an Indians World Series ticket. Even if it goes all the way to the end and, you know, they win the World Series and I can die a happy man, you should still make money on it if you're hedging responsibly in the first two rounds. But because they're guaranteed to win the division at this point, barring some sort of horrendous, awful, catastrophic thing, you know that you have hedging possibilities there. Somewhere that would be different would be something like if you want to take an Arizona future or a Milwaukee future or something like that, to where, you know, these are very good baseball teams, but they may not win the division. They may not make the playoffs at all, and they could very well be the wild card team. If they're the wild card team, you have to start hedging immediately. You have to make a play in that wildcard game because it's a one-game winner-go-home playoff situation. So that would be a different kind of futures price. That would be something where maybe you would go 1 or 2%, something like that. Again, depending on your risk tolerance, depending on, you know, what you need to put into it in order to hold something for that long of an amount of time. I love questions like this because it gives me the opportunity to talk about something a little bit different. It gives me the opportunity to talk about the nuances of betting. Anybody can handicap a game. Anybody can break down a game. Any Tom, Dick, or Harry can write a game preview with different things to look at and recent statistics and all these types of things. The true talent in this industry comes from being able to bet, knowing your edges, being able to calculate edges, knowing bankroll management techniques, knowing how to stay above the game in terms of your emotions, you know, having willpower. So these are all very important concepts. These are very important things to be talking about. However, to slap a percentage on there or tell you how you're supposed to bet, that's a little bit different because, again, it's all relative to the size of your bankroll, to how much of your bankroll you want to have in play with futures, how much of your bankroll you play on a day-to-day basis. So it's a challenging type of thing, but I can tell you that much like the sliding scale for percentages of individual plays, you want to have that for futures as well. The Indians are a future that you want a higher percentage play on. The Diamondbacks, the Brewers, probably not as high. You know, you think about the wild card situation in the American League, Boston and New York are going to be favored over whoever the other wild card team is. Probably Seattle at this point. New York and Boston would both be favored in that one game playoff. So maybe you can afford to go a little bit heavier on them because you know that Seattle, even if James Paxton is the guy who starts that wild card game, you know that you're going to get a plus money price in that one. So those are the things that you want to look at. You want to try to think ahead. You want to try to plan ahead. When it comes to something like the Indians, they're going to win the division. There's just no doubt about it. So you can go higher with them because you know you'll have that hedging margin. The Yankees are a phenomenal team. If they find a way to not win the AL East, if Boston does beat them out for that crown, and then the Yankees, you know, get into that one-game playoff against Seattle, and they do have to face James Paxton, maybe they don't have Severino ready to go, something like that. You know, the Yankees, for as good as they are, if you've got a 5-to-1 futures price on them, and there's a chance that they wind up in that wild card game, that's very, very difficult for you. You know, even if they are 60, 65, 70% to win that wild card game, 3 out of 10 times they're not going to. And in a one game sample size, that's fairly significant. So because the Indians are going to avoid that wild card game, you know, you can go higher with a future like this. So this isn't really your traditional futures play because you know you have profit potential at the end for an easy hedge. Sometimes you don't always get that opportunity. Like I said, if Arizona misses the playoffs, then that ticket has no equity to it. So in Indians' future, you'd want to go higher. So you do want to follow at least some sort of sliding scale when it comes to, you know, these division futures or World Series futures or whatever else. When it comes to season win totals, you obviously you want to bet based on your confidence factor. But, you know, again, I mean, those are bets that are locked in. Those are black and white. Those are it wins or it loses. You're not really hedging a season win total. Sometimes you get the opportunity to do so where, you know, maybe the last game of the year or if it's a series price hedge, something like that, you can't have that opportunity. But overall, a lot of times those win totals are black and white. These World Series futures, these pennant futures, there's some gray area involved. But with the Indians, there's really not a whole lot of gray area here. So it is a low-risk bet, so you would want to go a little bit higher there. But again, the two takeaways there are you do want to, you know, bet your futures accordingly based on your confidence factor and also your profit potential. But ultimately, I think the most important thing to talk about here is that you want to have a separate futures bankroll. And if you don't use it, you don't use it. You can always reevaluate your bankroll, transition some of that into your day-to-day betting if you want to. But going into a season, I would recommend having, you know, a certain amount of that bankroll squared away for futures, both preseason ones and then also some futures over the course of the season. Got another email question here from Brian, and he says, when making a first five sides play, do you always play the money line or you find value at either the minus half a run or plus half a run line? So when it comes to the article, it's always going to be just the first five money line because not everybody's going to have access to these alternate run lines for the first five. I know everybody has first five money line odds. I want to make sure that that article is as inclusive as it possibly can be. So I won't really talk too much about the run lines for the first five. Now, that being said, of course, there can be value in them. I mean, there's value in anything where you feel like you have an edge. I don't think there's as much value in the plus half a run line, because if you think a team is going to be in the game, you think the underdog has a chance to win that, just go ahead and bet the plus money price with the first five money line. Don't cost yourself anything. If they push, they push. It happens. But excuse me. But, you know, I think that there probably is some value on that minus 0.5 first five run line, especially with the regression analysis handicapping that we do. Now, I will say this. So far this season, there have been 1,564 games played. 440 of them have been tied after five innings. So that's 28.1%. So, and the vast majority of these games do have a leader after the first five innings. So, you know, you're not going to push all that often, but obviously with 440 out of 1,564, there are some games that do push. But again, you always want to look for edges at the best possible prices. Now, I don't do a lot of plus one and a halves in hockey or baseball with the money lines for the full games. So like I said, the plus 0.5 doesn't really interest me a ton. If I think the dog can win it, I'm going to go ahead and take that plus money price. And if it pushes, it pushes, it happens. It is what it is. We've been doing a lot more first fives here in the article this year because of, you know, bullpen volatility and things like that. And we haven't really had too many first fives that have pushed. It is a limited sample size based on the games that I've been looking at. But you know, yeah, there can be value in those. But like I said, I think I'd rather lay the half a run than take the half a run. I think that there's just more value in doing that. And again, especially because of the regression analysis handicapping that we do. Second question from Brian in that same email here. After how many at-bats between pitcher A and batter A, can we assume that we will see similar results in the future as we have already seen in the past? So basically, this is a batter versus pitcher stats question. And from a statistical standpoint, you will never reach a point where you should assume anything. When you look at batting statistics specifically, batting average never stabilizes, never reaches a point of reliability. On base percentage will stabilize. On base percentage, slugging and OPS will stabilize at 350 plate appearances with a reliability point at 500 plate appearances. Home run to fly ball rate will stabilize at 100 plate appearances, reach a point of reliability at 350 plate appearances. Strikeout rate and walk rate do reach stabilization points and reliability points much lower, but we're still talking about 40 plate appearances for each for stabilizing and 150 for strikeouts and 200 for walks until we reach a point of reliability, which is a certain correlation factor. So basically, when it comes to batter versus pitcher stats, statistically, they will never be relevant. They will never reach a point of significance. Just from a pure mathematical standpoint, they will never mean anything. Now, that being said, there is a mental element to this. You know, when we look at, for example, with the golf handicapping previews that I write, and I'll have a couple out here, I'll have another one out here today, and you know, we'll try to take an earlier look at the Open Championship next week at Carnoustie. There's a mental factor to everything. And you talk about horse for course types of plays where some golfers just play really well on a certain course. Some guys who maybe aren't that good overall, but they get to a course where they've played well and it just works out for them. And sometimes it's a thing where that course just plays very well for them. Maybe they play well on certain types of greens. Maybe the fairways are angled in a way that, you know, really benefits their ball flight. You know, maybe it's a shorter course. So instead of having to play those middle irons with a second shot, they're kind of going in there with 7 and 8 irons to where they've got a little bit more ball control, can get a little bit closer to the hole, stuff like that. Maybe it's just a green reading thing. Maybe there aren't two-tiered greens. Maybe it's, you know, some greens that are pretty straightforward, things like that. Maybe it's a guy who judges pace better than he judges break, and it's some flatter greens. You know, whatever the case may be, guys just have a certain confidence factor when they play on a course where they've played well. When guys walk into the batter's box against a pitcher that they've hit well, there probably is something more to it. Maybe they do pick up the arm slot a little bit better. Maybe they're focused in a little bit better, something like that. There is a mental element to it. So while statistically batter versus pitcher matchups don't mean anything at all, I think that there is a mental element to it or, you know, maybe a hitter just, maybe it's a pitcher type that he hits well. You know, there are some guys that just hit really good pitchers. Manny Ramirez, for example, to me, you know, aloof as can be, a guy that was kind of out there in his own world. You had the whole Manny being Manny thing. That dude hit good closers. He hit closers that had good stuff, because a lot of times closers historically that have had good stuff, especially back in the 90s, I mean, we see it's a little bit different now with the game as specialized as it is, but a lot of those guys had really good sliders. Manny Ramirez had some of the best opposite field power I have ever seen and will ever see. So when he's getting these right-handed closers that have these power sliders that a lot of guys can't hit, Manny just stayed on the baseball and hit it out to right center field and hit it a damn long way. Well, that was a matchup that worked for him. That was a pitcher that he knew he could hit because of the skill set that he had. So some hitters just probably do feel like they have that against certain pitchers. But again, if you're looking at it from a statistical standpoint, and a lot of what I do is statistically based in nature, there's not a whole lot that you can rely on there. You know, when you think about early season statistics, how they fluctuate because of the small sample sizes, that's kind of how you can look at it with the batter versus pitcher sample sizes as well, where, you know, they're just going to move around a lot. You know, if you've got a guy who's 5-for-11 against a certain pitcher, you know, they're talking about it in the pregame show, everyone's blowing it all up, this and that. He goes 0-for-4 against that guy in that game. All of a sudden, he's 5-for-15. You know, all of a sudden, that 455 batting average goes down to 333. Yes, I get it. It's still a good number to be at 333. Again, we're talking about 5 hits and 15 plate or 15 at bats. What if they're all singles? Does that mean anything? They're all singles. They're all batted balls that just happen to find a hole. If he's 5-for-11 with 4 home runs and a double, you know, maybe that's a guy that he's going to walk into the batter's box with some confidence against. If it's 5 singles and 15 trips with 8 strikeouts, yeah, he's batting 333, but he struck out 8 of those 15 times. So what does that mean? What does that tell us? It doesn't tell us much of anything, to be honest with you. It actually tells us that that pitcher probably has gotten unlucky on those batted balls in play. So batter versus pitcher stats just don't really have a whole lot of meaning to me. Same thing with team versus pitcher stats, just not a whole lot of meaning. Personnel is always changing. Pitchers are always changing up their arsenals, things like that. So because there's no statistical relevance to it, I don't concern myself with it. I don't worry about it. Not even a factor for me. As you know, I even make light sometimes of some of the people that do cite the team versus pitcher statistics to try and sell a play or justify a play or whatever else. But for me, this doesn't have any value. You know, and I'm not a Major League Baseball player, so I don't know what it means to them. If they know, if they care, if it's something that they're consciously thinking about while they're in the batter's box, there probably is some sort of mental element to it. Because look, hitting is hard. Hitting is really, really hard. If you've got a guy that you pick up well, you go into the box with that little bit of increased level of confidence, an increased level of focus, maybe it does help you. But quantifiably, I don't know how much, so I don't really worry too much about those batter versus pitcher stats. So 3 good questions here for today's Monday Mailbag, again.com or at Skating Tripods. And I promise I'll get the notes out here today for today's show. I realize I didn't get Thursdays out until the weekend, so I do apologize for that to everybody that's on that mailing list. All right, let's go ahead and go beyond the box score here. And before we look back at what just happened, let's talk about what could happen going forward. And I want to tell everybody out there, this is a very important thing. If you don't take anything else from today's show, this is something I want you to comprehend and understand. This week, you need to be very, very, very careful. This is the most difficult week of the first half of the season to bet. I think it's even harder than the first week of the year where we're still trying to figure out a lot of different things about these teams. You've got some pitchers that are going to be pissed off that they're not going to the All-Star game. You've got some teams that are gearing up for that downtime, some of the really bad teams that are out there. Some players won't get a lot of downtime, so maybe the managers give them a day off here or two. You know, some guys are going to go on vacation. Managers will sit guys on Sunday if they're going to the All-Star game. I really wouldn't do much of anything on Sunday, to be totally honest with you. But you want to stick to what we've been talking about. Good teams are still going to try to win games. Good teams are still going to try to bank wins. Bad teams are halfway to vacation. We'll talk about one of those bad teams here in a few minutes in the Baltimore Orioles. We've got uncertain times with the trade deadline. You've got to be very, very careful here this week. You know, if you've got a team that's played a lot of games without an off day, and they know that that All-Star game is coming up, that All-Star break is coming up, you know, what is their focus level? If you've got a team that's got a big lead somewhere in a division, or they win a series and they kind of take a game off, those are things that will happen this week. I think this week, more so than any other week during the season, there's a lot of situational handicapping involved. And, you know, we talk about it here on the show that there's really not a whole lot of situational handicapping in Major League Baseball as a whole, because there are just so many games, so many, you know, travel. You're in a city for three straight days. You know, it's not like the NBA where you might play in Denver, then you go to Phoenix, then you got to go up to Sacramento or something, you know, play three games in 4 days. You're traveling all over the place. When you get to a city in baseball, you're there for 3 or 4 days. So there aren't as many situational spots to consider, but there are situational spots this week because you've got teams with much, much different motivations. So be very careful, tread lightly. You know, we'll do the same thing when it comes to the article. All right, so over the weekend here, we had the Oakland A's take 2 out of 3 from the Cleveland Indians as the Indians bullpen reared its ugly head in this series. Shaky on Friday night, bad on Saturday, not great on Sunday. This had stabilized a little bit for the Indians, but you know, they still need relief help. They desperately need to find some relief help here over the next 3 weeks prior to the trade deadline. One concerning factor for the Indians is that they didn't hit a single home run in this series. In the month of May, they hit everything at home. Very hot, very warm here over the last few days, and they still didn't hit any home runs. They have one home run in their last 5 games. That was a Yan Gomes Grand Slam 5 games ago. They haven't hit one in the last. This is a problem for them because they don't score much without the long ball. Now, I know they had 9 runs, I think, in Friday's game, but they had some sacrifice flies. They had some stolen bases. You know, they had some things of that sort. Very rare to see them have a big offensive showing without the long ball, because they don't draw as many walks anymore. They're a contact-based lineup now, and they really haven't had a whole lot of good luck on batted balls. They've been one of the teams in the bottom on the 95-plus exit velocity list for both batting average and WOBA throughout the season. You know, they just hit home runs, and that's pretty much it. I kind of wonder here if this is an Indians team slowing down a little bit. They've played a lot of baseball over the last 2 seasons. You know, they haven't had a whole lot of off days here this year. The primary guys play a ton. Terrence really runs them into the ground. Jose Ramirez never gets a day off. Francisco Lindor never gets a day off. So you know, this could be a spot where the Indians are just kind of, you know, running out of gas a little bit, I could say. Now, also, that being said, they're only 21-26 when they play teams outside of the American League Central. So they've really padded their record against the bad teams. Here this week, they play the Reds and they get the Yankees for 4 this weekend. So maybe that gets the competitive juices flowing. Maybe that kind of kicks them in the ass a little bit. But, you know, for right now, I'm not interested in laying prices with the Indians. And I really haven't been throughout most of the season, especially when they go outside of the division. But they're taking on an upstart Reds team. It's taking a lot of money from the betting market lately. Then they take on the Yankees. Could be a playoff preview. So interesting week here for the Indians. I think they're one of those good teams that, you know, I think it's hard for them to bank wins here because they're playing outside of the division. And they also know, too, you have an increased margin for error when your division is this bad. They still play 30-some-odd games in the second half against the division. So you know, this is a team that I just don't feel all that confident in right now. Again, no home runs this weekend, 1 in the last 5. We'll see. They get some Reds pitchers in this series that do give up some long balls. Anthony DeSclafani tonight is one of those guys. So maybe they get the home runs back on track. But, you know, right now, just not a real great look for the Indians, I would say. The A's, their offense is strong. And now you've got Dustin Fowler at the top of the order. 298 batting average, 315 on base, 462 slugging percentage since the start of June. Doesn't draw walks, but he's hitting for power. He's getting on base. He's elevating this offense. 7 of the 9 guys in this A's offense on Sunday, 300 or better on base percentage. So they're getting guys on base up and down the lineup. Fowler was one of those guys, but he's kind of on the move up. If he walked more, he'd already be there. Had Josh Fagley, the backup catcher, hitting 9th yesterday. They're not as power dependent as they used to be. So I think this A's offense really is here to stay. I think this is a very strong group. Been very impressed with the quality of their contact and the quality of their plate appearances here this weekend as I saw them up close. I think that, you know, Oakland is a team that could, they're not going to be the second wild card, I don't think. I don't know if they can run down Seattle, But I do think this is a pretty solid team. And I will maybe look to do something with their season win total for the second half, maybe looking to double up because I do have them for the full season. The New York Mets blown out in the series finale, so they lose that series. Apologies to anybody who took the series price in that one. And they're just a bad team. You know, they're just a bad team. Jacob deGrom gives you another gem on Friday. Needed a walk-off grand slam to win that game. Shut out in the next two games of this series. And this is one of those things where, you know, I made a pretty compelling case last week about the positive regression coming for the Mets. But this is one of those things where I think I just need to follow my degrees of regression concepts where you talk about Justin Verlander and his numbers and how he's going to regress. But regression for him is different than regression for somebody else. Regression for the Mets is different than regression for somebody else. You know, they're just not a good team. The bullpen is horrendous. They're toxic at this point, honestly. I don't see, unless you want to play Jacob deGrom because he's that good, I just don't see a whole lot of reasons to back the Mets right now. And I tried to trust in the numbers, as we talked about on last week's show, but this team just doesn't have it. They just don't have anything right now. And this is one of those teams that's really looking forward to the All-Star break because they've had a lot of injuries. It's a brutal city to play in from a media standpoint. I'm sure there have been some hiccups and some disagreements in the clubhouse. You can't touch them this week. I don't think you can do it at all. I really don't think so. The Rays had one pitcher give up runs in this series. That was Chaz Rowe. He's now on the DL for 4 to 6 weeks. So the Rays pitching staff just kept it going here in this series, and we'll see if they're able to do that. I do think that they are a team still in line for some regression. I think this was just one where the Mets are that bad. I'm still looking for opportunities to play against the Tampa Bay Rays. Milwaukee Brewers took 3 out of 4 from the Braves in their series. Only loss in the game started by Aaron Wilkerson, who's really not a major league caliber pitcher. But the big difference in this series, Milwaukee hit 7 home runs. Atlanta in the 4-game series hit 0. No home runs for the Braves in this series. And they had chances. 8 for 34 with a runner in scoring position. The Brewers were only 8 for 13. But that was the difference. Milwaukee hit 7 home runs. The Braves hit none. And this is something I've talked about a lot with Milwaukee here over the last year and a half, is that they've put a large amount of emphasis on contact management. They've got several guys in the top 50 in exit velocity against. And what that means is that they're not giving up a lot of home runs. In the current Major League Baseball climate, if you don't give up home runs, you can win games. Brewers have the 7th best home run to fly ball percentage against this season, and they are the 3rd best in the last 30 days. Only the Giants and the Marlins are better, and both of those teams are in phenomenal pitchers' parks. For the Brewers here, you know, this is a team that does not allow the long ball, which is a huge help for them. So when you see them play teams that get a big chunk of their offense from home runs, like the Cardinals, like the Dodgers, the Nationals, the Diamondbacks, the Brewers will probably be a good team to back in those situations because they just don't allow home runs. It's a brilliant thing that they're doing. Because another thing, too, is that, you know, velocity, I've talked about this before, but velocity and strikeouts cost money. If you can find those guys where you can get some surplus value out of them by keeping them from allowing home runs, that is a brilliant move as a small market team. And the Brewers are doing that right now. And that is a good angle to look to play with them, where they just do not allow a whole lot of home runs. And Miller Park was a decent hitter's park for the longest time. It's still not a bad hitter's park. But they just don't give up home runs. You know, they're really targeting pitch tunneling, and they're really targeting, you know, throwing into certain quadrants of the zone where the opposition doesn't hit for a high slugging percentage. And it has really, really worked out well for them. So that was the big difference there in this series, that the Braves, 0 home runs in those 4 games. And my guess is, and I haven't looked at this, I haven't quantified it, and maybe this is something I'll try to look at a little bit more. My guess is that Oakland's doing this same thing too. That's part of the reason why the Indians didn't hit any home runs this past weekend. That would be my guess, because the Indians are a power-hungry team. So just a little food for thought there, I guess. Colorado Rockies took 2 of 3 from the Seattle Mariners. We were on Herman Marquez in the opener in that one. The Rockies getting to James Paxton in the 7th inning of game 2. Just a giveaway game on Sunday. That's another batting angle to look at here. Good teams that lose the first 2 games of a series, particularly at home, should be able to salvage that 3rd game. know, they don't want to get swept. And the other team's just happy to win the series over a good team. So that Sunday game, if you've lost the first two, I think that Sunday game is a very good spot to back the favorite, back the better team. Just kind of a situational betting angle that I think probably plays out more often than not. The Rockies will host the Mariners next weekend, so we'll see if the Mariners can exact a little bit of revenge there. But, you know, we talked about this with the Mariners, that they were just a team in line for some regression. It did hit here. They go from – it was kind of the same theory that we used with Tampa Bay when they played Miami last week. The Mariners played a really strong schedule. Then they went into the weaker part of the schedule, ran off a bunch of wins. Then they play a decent team in Colorado at home, have a little bit of a setback. It's a tough thing over 162 games to play at a high level night in and night out. So not a big surprise that the Mariners had a little bit of a setback here in this series. Antonio Senzatella did not pitch well in yesterday's game. However, 16.8% usage of the changeup. So it does look like he's going to sustain that third pitch a little bit, at least in terms of its usage. I'd love to see him throw fewer fastballs and crank up the slider usage a little bit more. But so far in his two starts, he's cut into the slider usage by throwing more changeups. So I'd like to see him cut into the fastball usage by throwing more changeups. And we'll see if that is an adjustment that he makes throughout the rest of the season. One more serious touch on here. That is the Twins and the Orioles. Pathetic effort again from Baltimore. I don't know. We relegate Baltimore to AAA, contract the team, whatever you want to do. 9 runs in the 4 games of this series for Baltimore against Minnesota pitching. Aaron Slagers, Lance Lynn, Jake Odorizzi, you know, just Kyle Gibson, guys who are fine, but you didn't see Jose Berrios in this series. Just brutal. They're 41 games under 500. Or it's not even the All-Star break, and they're 40 games under 500. And there's really not much help on the horizon either. They're not going to get a whole lot out of Manny Machado because they have zero leverage in any Manny Machado trade. They've got some bullpen pieces they can look to move, but Zach Britton's basically been hurt for a year and a half, so you're not going to get much for him. Brad Brock is an impending free agent. They're not going to move Michael Givens. Darren O'Day is hurt now. It's a mess. Absolute mess. They're going to have to move on from Buck Showalter. Kind of hope they put him out to pasture just for his own sanity. It's bad. It is so bad for Baltimore right now. You know, money keeps coming in on Alex Cobb, and he got shelled again. It's a train wreck. It's an absolute, and they don't have a minor league system to speak of, none whatsoever. They've spent a ton of money unwisely on guys like Chris Davis, and you know, when they had Yobaldo Jimenez and Chris, keep bringing back Chris Tillman because they just need warm bodies. It's bad. It is so bad, and the Twins taking advantage of it. So kudos to them for that. All right, let's go down the lines here, talk about some line moves dating back to Friday. And a reminder on why we do this segment, you know, we want to pick up on some market trends from influential bettors. You know, we've seen some runs on the Padres, the Reds, the Rangers recently. The market starts picking up on teams, and generally, for the most part, they wind up doing pretty well because they're seeing those indicators that are out there that it's a good time to buy. So while I would never tell anyone to blindly tail or follow the money, anything like that, you know, when you pick up on some of these trends, they are important things for you to look at. Even if all it does is keep you off of the other side, you know, these are important things to look at. Then, of course, also we anticipate overnight and morning line moves based on what's going out there, ERA to xFIP discrepancy, left on base percentage and BABIP, stuff like that. Friday, we saw some Reds money hit the board. We've seen Reds money hit the board a lot lately. That was Tyler Mahle going up against Mike Montgomery. That was a winner for anybody who took the Reds in that one. That was one where I think that, you know, the market just felt the price was too high. I do like Mike Montgomery a lot. Tyler Mahle is a guy who gives up a lot of home runs, but the pitching conditions were pretty decent in Chicago that day, so the Reds were able to take that one down. Gio Gonzalez of the Nationals took money against Dan Straley and the Marlins. That was a slow pitch softball game. I think it was like 14-12 or something like that. But you know, again, the market is backing the Nationals. We talked about this ad nauseum last week. But the Nationals are too talented to be where they are, but they are where they are. And the market keeps coming in on them, came in on them there in that one. Fortunately, it worked out for anybody who took Washington. But you know, that is a team where they're just not living up to their potential at all right now. Saw Sonny Gray take some road money. That was for the Yankees against the Toronto Blue Jays. The road splits for Sonny Gray had a lot to do with that. Also, probably a fade of Sam Gaviglio, who threw pitches in 4 1/3 innings, I think, in that one. But Sonny Gray was not good in that start. Really hasn't been good for the Yankees overall. That was a spot where, you know, the market came in on Gray with those road splits. He just didn't pay him back for it. We saw Carlos Carrasco money come in on his return from the disabled list. The Indians were a winner in that one. And you know, this is something I've talked about a lot here on the show as well, where I have no interest in backing guys coming off of the disabled list. I just don't want to do it. There's too much uncertainty. You don't know what the command profile is going to look like. You don't know what they were working on in the minor leagues. Did they mix all their pitches? Did they just go out there and throw 85% fastballs to make sure that, you know, the injury was healthy, something like that. I guess maybe the market thinks that those players are priced a little bit low in that first start back, but it is not something that I generally have a whole lot of interest in doing. And we've seen a lot of those disabled list moves here lately. So it kind of got me thinking about, you know, why that might be a thing. I guess maybe, like I said, the market just thinks that, you know, those guys are priced a little bit low because they're kind of forgotten commodities. You know, we saw a move on Robbie Ray making his third start off the DL. 2 days ago, I think it was. And, you know, not me. Maybe it's a risk tolerance thing for me, but I just don't think that, you know, you can really forecast any degree of certainty with these pitchers that are coming off of the DL. Somebody came in on Jacob DeGrom and the Mets on Friday. It was against Ryan Stanek as the opener and Ryan Yarbrough, who followed him. Mets win that game 5-1 on that walk-off grand slam, but DeGrom pitched great again with, once again, nothing to show for it. Somebody came in on Lance Lynn and the Twins. That was against Dylan Bundy and the Baltimore Orioles. And, you know, we saw people betting on the Orioles, again, that they can't be that bad theory. They are that bad. Money is not coming in on the Orioles anymore, unless it's an Alex Cobb start. And we saw the Twins taking some money there in that one. Chris Sale went from minus 290 to as high as minus 450 at MyBookie, Pinnacle 365, and others in that range as well for that start against the Royals. And this is another trend that we've seen this season as well. Severino, Sale, Kershaw, Kluber up until, you know, recently. The aces of the staffs are getting bet up no matter what. And Sale is a guy that it's certainly deserving for, especially, you know, in a spot like this against the Royals, where I told my wife, I said, you know, before the game even started, I said, well, Chris Sale's got a chance to throw a no-hitter tonight because he's playing the Royals. And so the market pumping that one up to probably the highest favorite role we've seen this year, or at least very close to it. And of course, the Red Sox did win that game. But we have seen a lot of moves come in on aces this season. So playing aces on the overnight, then deciding if you want to come and play back on the other side or just buy out of it, that is a betting angle that you can look to consider as we go forward here. Somebody hit the board on Joey Lucchesi. That's for the Padres against Zach Godley and the Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks did win that one. Godley has been very, very shaky here of late. Lucchesi, again, a guy recently coming off the DL. No interest in it for me, but you know, the market having no problem with those here lately. So some money hit the board on Jameson Taillon on Saturday. That was against Jake Arrieta. Arrieta has that ERA to xFIP discrepancy, so the market looking to fade him a little bit. Some money hit the board on Carlos Martinez and the St. Louis Cardinals against the Giants on Saturday. C-Mart's back on track. He looks really, really good. Several starts removed from that disabled list stint now. He looks fantastic. He's a guy I think the market will be backing a little bit here now. Saw Luis Severino take money. Just talked about that. Same thing with James Paxton. That was against Kyle Freeland in the Rockies. That was a loser there, but Freeland also 3.18 ERA, 4.12 FIP, 4.19 xFIP. Part of the move there for that was also a fade of Kyle Freeland, who only worked five innings but pitched around trouble in that one. Charlie Morton got pumped up big. Max Scherzer got pumped up big. So, again, those elite-level starters taking on money a lot here this weekend, and in particular on Saturday. Somebody hit the board on Domingo Germán and the Yankees. That was against Ryan Barucki and the Blue Jays on Sunday. Barucki pitched really good again, so kudos to him for that, but the offense just not coming around for the Blue Jays. Saw a fade of Nate Eovaldi. That was for the Rays against the Mets. Again, the market probably seeing a lot of the same things that I was seeing with that series. The Rays are a regression candidate. The Mets should be a positive regression candidate. Alas, they decided not to do that in Sunday's game. Got beat 9-0. We did see money come in against Nate Eovaldi, who only allowed one hit in that start. Saw fade of the Indians on Sunday. That was Brett Anderson against Shane Bieber. The Indians were resting a couple of guys. The bottom of their lineup was a train wreck yesterday. A little bit of a fade of Shane Bieber as well, who's had you know, he's had some base runners here in his big league career. He's kind of pitched around some of those things, but, you know, the market looking to go against him in that one, and they were rewarded as the A's came away with the win. Big fade of Jake Odorizzi here. That was with Alex Cobb on the mound for the Orioles. Again, that was a spot that, you know, the market's been on Alex Cobb start after start after start, who's already 2-11 on the year. Again, pitcher win-loss doesn't mean anything to me, but to have 11 losses and to have missed like a month of the season is remarkable at this point in time. But Cobb is taking on money for Baltimore, and it's not working out. So we'll see if the market decides not to do that going forward. We didn't see a line move in the Reds and Cubs game, and I really expected one here. Luis Castillo taking on money a lot lately. John Lester, a big-time regression candidate. ERA to xFIP split would suggest the same. Very low BABIP, high left on base percentage with a decreased strikeout rate. John Lester is a regression candidate to me. The market didn't really want to go against him there in that start, and the Cubs did win that one in walk-off fashion, but I will fade Lester more often than not here going forward. All right, some line moves for Monday. We've got a couple of doubleheaders here today. The Yankees and the Orioles, and then also the Phillies in a doubleheader with the Mets. We're seeing Yankees money in both of the games here already. That's hardly a big surprise with Baltimore being as bad as they are. But one quick betting trend, and I'm not a betting trends guy, but I do want to throw this one out there. It's also in the Picks and Tips article today. The loser of game one is 13-1 straight up in game two. Over the last 14 doubleheaders, 13-3 overall here in 2018, and 38-21 dating back to the start of 2016. So teams do not want to get swept in those doubleheaders, although I think today, with Aaron Nola pitching game two for the Phillies and the Yankees playing against the Orioles, decent chance we see sweeps in both of them. I won't be playing game two if that's the case. If the Phillies and the Yankees lose game one, I will probably look to play on them in game two. Based on this trend, based on the fact that you've got Nola going for the Phillies, but this trend makes some sense. I mean, the 26th man for the doubleheader generally starts one of the two games, so you usually have a better pitcher going in the other game. And also, it's a long day at the ballpark, and it's 162 games, and we've got a lot of bad teams that are out there now. So if you've got a good team, you don't feel that same pressure to sweep the doubleheader. As long as you get one of them, you're happy with that. You've spent 12 hours at the ballpark. You don't want the entire day to be a complete waste. So this trend makes some sense. And I think it probably does continue, as we go forward over the next few years. But for right now, 13-3 overall in 2018, that the loser of game one wins game two. Seeing the Indians take some money here, Mike Clevinger today in this one against Anthony DeSclafani and the Reds. DeSclafani has allowed a lot of home runs in his six starts coming off the DL. I think it's 9 or 10. The Indians need to start hitting some more home runs because that's how they score the bulk of their runs. Clevinger's a real tough plate appearance if you haven't seen him very much before. So maybe that's something kind of factoring in for the Indians in this one. I don't have a play on this game, but was interesting to see the Indians take money when the Reds have been taking money pretty much every day. Big Chase Anderson fade today with Milwaukee heading down to take on Miami. I actually do like the Brewers today in this one now with that line coming down. Chase Anderson, again, it's all about contact management. And he's also been much better since he came off the DL. Spent, I think, 10 or 11 days on the DL because of an illness. Maybe that was something that was kind of lingering for him a little bit, taking away some of his strength. Better since coming back. And the Marlins are just not a great team. Also for Chase Anderson, his problem has been the home run. Balls in play, done a great job with contact management, but he's given up some home runs here. Marlins Park does not play small. It's a big, spacious yard. Not a lot of hitting for power there. That helps Chase Anderson out in that one, but the market has come in on Miami for that matchup. Seeing Chris Archer take some money in his first start back off the DL. Saw a big move on Jose Barrios earlier on. That's come back down a little bit. They're taking on the Royals in that one. Flip favorite situation tonight, Cubs-Giants. That's Kyle Hendricks and Andrew Suarez. Suarez and the Giants now favored in that one as Kyle Hendricks really struggling here of late. So I do like the Brewers a little bit today, but not a great card overall. Not really a whole lot of things I'm interested in. So let's do something a little bit different here today. Let's take a shot on a big underdog. Now, again, because this is a big underdog, this play will lose more often than it will win. But if it wins, we'll get a nice 2-1 payback on the Oakland A's. Gerrit Cole's hit some regression here a little bit of late. Very, very, very good at the outset of the year. run into some bumps in the road here over his last five or six starts. The A's have a good bullpen. If you want to take a look at a big underdog, you have to back one that has a good bullpen. You just have to do it. Because the last thing you want to do, be in a situation where your big underdog is up in the sixth or seventh inning and the bullpen takes a shit all over it. Back big dogs that have good bullpens. The A's have a good bullpen. Also, Frankie Montas, tonight's starter, pretty decent splits against righties. The Astros are very right-handed heavy. Lefties have taken him to the woodshed, but he's been pretty good against righties. So I think Oakland is worth an underdog look here tonight. And again, just to reiterate from the article, when I talk about, you know, my play percentages, 1, 2, 3, up to 5%, if I'm playing an underdog over plus 140, over plus 150, somewhere in that range, I bet X to win 3%. I don't put 3% on that play. I play to win 3% because, again, that play is going to lose more often than it will win. So for Oakland, that's the play tonight, is you basically bet X to win 3% or, you know, whatever your personal equivalent is with your bankroll. But I do think that Oakland is worth a shot here in tonight's action. All right, let's preview the week ahead here. I got two series I want to touch on. The A's and the Astros, the first one. We just talked about the first game, Frankie Montas and Garrett Cole tonight. Sean Manaea, Justin Verlander tomorrow. Chris Bassett, Lance McCullers on Wednesday. Trevor Cahill coming off the DL and Charlie Morton on Thursday. You know, one of the angles that I'm going to talk about here a little bit is talking about looking for buy teams that want to bank wins. Will the Astros be able to do that here? I don't know. The A's are playing very well. The offense is firing on all cylinders. Talk about Dustin Fowler, and what he's done here at the top of this order to help them out. They've got a good bullpen. This could be viewed as a litmus test for Oakland. You know, this is a team that is playing very, very good baseball right now. Isn't getting a whole lot of respect. A's or Astros, of course, the reigning champions. They are the top dog in the West. You know, they've played great baseball all throughout. Do the A's show up a little bit more here? Could be an interesting underdog throughout this series. Cubs and Giants. The Cubs are 9-2 over their last 11. They're one of those teams I talked about that will want to bank wins before the All-Star break, and that's precisely what they've been doing. Starting a six-game road trip here in San Francisco, you got Kyle Hendricks and Andrew Suarez tonight, Jose Quintana, Johnny Cueto tomorrow, Mike Montgomery, Derek Rodriguez on Wednesday. Hendricks and Quintana both struggling a little bit, but these are optimal ballparks for them to pitch in at AT&T Park, and then Hendricks will get a start at Petco Park later on in the week. The Giants are still a regression candidate to me. You know, I didn't take the Cubs here in today's article, but, you know, they will intrigue me in the next two games as I break them down a little bit more. So the Cubs are one of those teams looking to bank some wins here heading into the All-Star break, and thus far they've done a very good job of doing it. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that list of buy teams in search of banking some wins. I do think the Cubs obviously are one of them. The Phillies could be one of them too, but that's mostly because they play the Mets here this week for four games with that doubleheader on Monday. You know, the Mets are dying for the All-Star break. So they're a team that I would have no interest in backing this week. Maybe that opens up some opportunities to play on the Phillies. The Dodgers, they're taking on the Padres here, but the Dodgers, another veteran team, a team that got off to a slow start. They've been an exceptionally good team over the last 6 or 7 weeks. Offensively, they've been terrific. They get a pretty weak Padres starting staff here. The Dodgers are a team that I think is looking to bank some of those wins. So I think they're a good team to play on. Also Milwaukee. And Milwaukee's one of those teams where you kind of think about some of these younger teams that are trying to contend for the first time. I talked about that a little bit last week. But the Brewers are a team still trying to prove something. I think they take that personally. You know, I think a lot of people still think they're not as good as the Cubs, and they may not be. They've got a chance to put a little bit of distance between themselves and the Cardinals here, maybe. They're a buy team to me right now because I think they want to finish this thing strong. They've got a fantastic bullpen. Craig Counsell leverages his relievers really well. Guys get the rest they need because they're deep. I think the Brewers are a buy team this week, and also the Twins. You know, the Twins coming off that series against Baltimore, now they play Kansas City. These are games you have to win. I don't think that they have any delusions of grandeur about their playoff chances. They're even talking about selling off some of their impending free agents. But they've got chances to get wins here. And I think that they will. I think that they will continue to play well going into the All-Star break. Just swept Baltimore in four. Wouldn't shock me if they sweep the Royals here in this series as well. They're trying to close the gap against this super weak schedule. And again, there's talent on this team. There's definitely talent on this team. And I think that they want to feel a little bit better about themselves as they go into the All-Star break. Two teams I would be very wary of here this week. Arizona is one of them. They play in Colorado here to kick off the week. Arizona's been so up and down. They've had a lot of attrition with pitcher injuries. Robbie Ray was down. Taiwan Walker's still out. They've had some call-ups and send-downs. They've had some guys that really have struggled on the road. I think Arizona is a team that you want to be very, very careful with as they play in Colorado here early in the week. And we'll revisit them on Thursday's show as well. One other team is Seattle. And Seattle's obviously a very good team. They're a top 10 offense. They're a phenomenal bullpen. They are still a regression candidate, though. They still have that Pythagorean win-loss discrepancy, still have that base runs discrepancy. The Angels are not a very good team, but the Angels are a veteran team as well. So they should be looking to bank some of these victories heading into the break, try to position themselves for a run at that second wild card, try to feel a little bit better about themselves. So I think Seattle is a team to also tread very lightly with here this week. Covered a lot of stuff here on today's show. We'll cover a lot more on Thursday. No addition to the Bettors Box 2 weeks from today. It's July 23rd. I got something I need to do that day, so we won't do one that day, but I will do one Thursday, two next week for the All-Star break, and then I'll be back on again that Thursday following the Monday that I can't do. So just wanted to give you a little bit of a heads up with that. Maybe we'll try to do some college football podcasts, some one-off things next week. I'll try to get together with my usual guests and see if that's something that they can fit in. Maybe we'll try to get a little bit of college football talk here on the shows while we don't have baseball games to be discussing. But that'll do it for me. Hope you enjoyed the show today, everybody. Remember, adam@bangandbook.com if you want the notes for the show, Monday mailbag questions, anything like that. And be sure to check out those college football season win total previews that we're rolling out over at bangandbook.com. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.